He didn't need to ask who I meant. They sent her. He stopped, gathering his thoughts, even as my heart sped up. There was a small earthquake 3 days ago. A gap opened in the ground. A small fissure. Barely big enough to slip through, but just wide enough for a small girl. There are soldiers camped outside here on the mountain. They're the ones who are giving orders to the Abdals, and who provide our rations. They threatened to withhold food until we told them what had happened inside the mountain. It was... He glanced anxiously at his sister. Delilah was looking at her feet. It was Delilah who was meant to be gathering provisions that day. She had to tell them the truth. They ordered the Abdals to send Delilah down into the opening to investigate. But Shahzad took her place. The Abdals lowered her down into the mountain, and then...
My heart quickened.
The rope gave way. When they pulled it back up, it looked like it had been cut through by something. And Shahzad...
He hesitated.
She didn't come back up.
Chapter 25. The fissure in the mountain swallowed the light hungrily as we peered down into it. The place where Shahzad had fallen. It seemed like it might go down forever. Except I knew it didn't because... She's alive! I could breathe easier once I knew that. Once I said it out loud. She might be hurt down there. She was probably starving since it had been 3 days, by Ahmed's skewed reckoning, without any dawns or dusks to gauge the time. But at least she was alive. I glanced at Zaheer. I want to get her out of there. But Zaheer was just staring incredulously down into the darkness. Finally, he spoke.
Then I'd suggest you start climbing, daughter of Bahadur.
He tossed me something, and I caught it midair without thinking. It was a tiny spark of fire. I almost dropped it before realizing it wasn't giving off any heat. It didn't burn my palms, just gave off light. My first thought was that he was playing cruel games with me again, that this was some trick or negotiation. Then Zaheer took one staggering step backward, away from the gap in the ground. It was a startlingly mortal gesture, an awkward stumble, as if his body might be made of flesh and blood instead of fire, like it might know real fear. Fear of whatever was down there. And I had the feeling that this time there wouldn't be any more negotiation. No way to get Zaheer any deeper into this mountain to save Shahzad. So I would start climbing. I looped a rope around my waist the way I remember Jin doing once. But my hands were clumsy and unused to it. Ahmed stepped forward.
Here,
he said gently, as if he could read what I was thinking. That I wished Jin were here. Wished I hadn't left him behind. Thank you, I said, letting him tie the knots I didn't know. When he was done, he cast it over a hook hanging from the ceiling, grabbing the other end and holding onto it. Rahim took hold too. And then I lowered myself into the unknown. The darkness was somehow different on the other side. In the mines there had been noise and heat, but here there was a stillness to the air, like it was trying to swallow the light in my hand. I descended slowly. The deeper I got, the more I felt like there was something watching me, something breathing down my neck. I turned on the rope, dashing the light around the walls of the fissure, but there was nothing but stone. Then suddenly, I felt a tremor on the rope. I reached out one hand to brace myself against the wall, but it was no good. The rope was still being fed in behind me. I was about to call up, to shout to Ahmed and Rahim to stop. But suddenly, it was as if a hand were covering my mouth. At the same moment, I felt a brush of air on my neck. And then, without warning, I was falling. The drop wasn't far, but I hit the ground with violent suddenness. The light in my hand didn't extinguish as I hit. I grabbed the end of the rope, tugging it to me. It looked like a clean cut, as if by a knife. Just like Ahmed had said happened to Shahzad. This was not a snapped rope. This was something else. There was a noise, as if from very far away, climbing up from the ground. I was hearing things. I had to be. Or it was a drip of water, or an echo of my own breathing. Except it didn't sound like that. It sounded like someone laughing. And it made me more afraid than anything I'd ever heard in my life. Then the light in my hand dashed across a figure curled up on one side, dark hair falling across her face, and I forgot everything else. Even she looked like she wasn't wholly there in this darkness. I could only make out the dirty white of her shirt and the darkness of her hair. Shahzad! I dropped next to her, relief rushing through me. I heard the sob in my own voice. She looked thinner, worn, and her eyes were shut. But she was breathing. I had to wake her up. "I'm sorry," I said to Shahzad, leaning over her. I slapped her hard across the face. She came awake, ready to fight, just not in any kind of state to. She flinched against the light. I'd never seen Shahzad flinch at anything.
"You're not real." She shut her eyes. "You're not real. You're not real."
She said it over and over again. "Come on," I forced lightness into my voice. "You know I wouldn't lie to you."
"Prove it."
Her voice rasped, and she tucked her head further into the crook of her arm. "Will you believe I'm real, if I can get us both out of here?" Finally, she opened her eyes, though they seemed unable to settle wholly on me, dancing unfocused across my face.
"It would be a start."
I glanced up at the opening far above us. I couldn't see it through the inky blackness, but I knew we couldn't be that far away. I wasn't sure they would hear me if I shouted, though. And if they did and tossed us down more rope, what good would it be? I only had one other idea, and it was an impossible one, even if it was our only hope. I silently prayed that I had enough of my genie gift left. "Hang on to me," I urged Shahzad. I closed my eyes, pouring all my concentration around me. There wasn't much in this mountain. I could already tell. In here, stone had been melted hard, and the dust was made mostly of iron. The desert was far away. But sand got everywhere. It came with me all the way from the desert, through the mountain, stuck to my skin and the folds of my clothes. It came trapped in the hair of the other prisoners and on the metal soles of the Abdal's feet. There was no escaping it. I took a slow, deep breath, fighting through the pain in my side. And I called it to me, all of it, every single tiny grain of sand I could reach. I felt it start to shift above us, stirring and then scuttling toward me like hundreds of thousands of tiny insects moving across the cave floor. It started to rain sand, slowly at first, then more quickly, and suddenly sand was pouring in around us. I didn't stop. I was too afraid to take a moment to breathe through the pain, too afraid that if I let it go, I would lose it. I gathered the sand up below us. I tried to think of water, the way Sam and Jin swam, the way they were able to make water lift them up when it seemed to want to drown them instead. I gathered the sand, surging it up around us with everything I had in me. I felt the sand shift, and I doubled over in pain, gasping. But I knew I couldn't let go, that if I did now, we would drown. I had to keep going. I had to. The sand poured in around us, lifting us higher and higher. I could see a sliver of light. I reached up, trying to grip the ledge, trying to find an escape from this place, even as I felt the sand begin to drop away below me. Hands were on my wrists and on Shazad's arms, pulling us out, and we collapsed on the ground. Solid ground. I saw Shazad lying there, breathing hard, Rahim lifting her up even as Ahmed did the same for me. But she never looked away, her eyes locked on me, blinking blearily in the light.
All right, she conceded. You're real.
I started to laugh, but instead I burst into tears, and I was embracing her, and we were both talking at once, spilling out weeks of words we'd been saving for each other. I was so close to getting them to freedom. There were only two things standing between us and escape now, Ashra's wall, and according to Ahmed and the others, the soldiers on the other side. Shazad filled me in as she led the way out of the tunnels.
There's a small army camp just beyond Ashra's wall, she told me as we worked our way over unsteady ground. That's where they control the Abdals from and keep an eye on things.
She was walking slowly, breathing hard, like she was already tired from the short walk.
We're supposed to clear the debris of rocks that comes from hacking our way into the mountain and empty them at the border of Ashra's wall, where the soldiers can keep track of us. They'll be suspicious that no one has come out in a while. I reckon they'll be more than suspicious when everyone appears unchained, I said, casting around for Delilah.
She was walking with Ahmed and Rahim, both of them keeping a close eye on her. Can Delilah cover our escape?
I don't know. Shazad was nothing if not honest.
She pulled herself up the slight incline, hanging on to the wall.
Everyone is a little worse for wear.
She glanced over her shoulder. Zahir was trailing far behind everyone else.
Your new friend... He can help us, can't he? He could if he was so inclined, but getting Zahir to cooperate was easier said than done, no matter what he'd promised. I slowed my pace, letting the rest of the prisoners draw ahead of me, until I'd fallen into step with Zahir.
There are soldiers waiting on the other side of that wall. When we get through, I need...
I stopped myself, choosing my words more carefully.
I want you to get us past them. Zahir was watching me with those uncanny, inhuman eyes as I spoke.
I believe we had a deal, daughter of Bahadur. Your people freed from Aramot, for my freedom from you. Once all of them are through Ashra's wall, our deal is done.
I'm planning on keeping my side of the bargain, but our deal isn't done until they're safe. I could see a light up ahead. Daylight. We must be almost out of the mountains. Or maybe it was just the light of Ashra's wall, but either way we were close. We're not done yet.
Ah,
Zahir said, cocking his head in that curious way, looking at me.
I see. And even after you are past those soldiers, we will not be done yet, will we?
I didn't say anything. He wasn't wrong. After these soldiers on the mountain, there would be other fights to win, other chances to lose everyone we had just saved. Fighting with a genie on our side. I wasn't sure I could pass that chance up.
You want more.
Zahir nodded knowingly.
I believe you call that greed, don't you? It's the downfall of many, from what I hear. We never wanted anything before your kind came to this world, you know. We just had. But you take, and you still want. You want your prince to take the throne, don't you?
I did. And I had made him swear that he would do what I wanted. And I wanted his help in this. I needed Ahmed to sit on that throne. I had given up too much for us to lose. We all had.
There is still a great battle ahead of you, isn't there?
Zaheer said.
One stray bullet, one blow, and your prince could be gone. And all this could be for nothing. Every single death, for nothing.
Everything he was saying was everything I was afraid of. His words made me feel suddenly frantic, that we might have fought this hard but still lose Ahmed, that the whole of this rebellion rested on one very mortal man.
You want to save him. That is why you want to keep me imprisoned,
Zaheer said.
Well, I can give you what you want.
Zaheer pulled a knife from the sleeve of his shirt, making me draw back quickly. But he didn't make a move to kill me. Instead, he turned the knife over, extending the hilt to me.
Take it,
he instructed. I already have a knife, I said carefully. We were getting closer to the light, headed for the soldiers waiting on the other side. I needed to play out this game with Zaheer before we reached them, even though I didn't understand it yet.
Ah, but this is a knife that can save your prince's life.
Suddenly the air itself seemed to close around my hand, leading my fingers to the hilt.
Use this knife to take the life of another prince, and I promise you that your prince will live through the battle to take the throne.
I would have dropped the knife instantly, except the air was still tightly wrapped around my hand, forcing it to clutch the blade.
A prince's life for a prince's life.
Zaheer didn't laugh, but I could tell he was mocking me. A prince's life. He meant Rahim's or Jin's life. They were the only other princes here.
Or?
The air finally stopped gripping my fingers.
You can cast the knife down, and maybe he will live, or maybe he won't. It will be in the hands of fate.
Zaheer said simply.
But I have never known fate to be all that kind, have you?
I hadn't, but I didn't reply. In the space of a breath, he was standing in front of me instead of beside me, like a flame jumping from one roof to another in a burning city. I staggered to a stop. He was so close that I could see the violent color of his eyes as he hissed the next words at me.
It is a mistake to try to outwit me, daughter of Bahadur. I have been helping you thus far, but I can make things very hard for you if you don't release me right now, no matter what you made me promise. You have a confused heart, just like every human. You want too many things. I can turn those things against each other like animals in your chest. I can destroy you from the very inside of your soul.
He drew away, just as quickly as he'd descended on me. I realized that everyone else ahead of us had stopped, too. We'd reached the mouth of the tunnel. Shahzad had paused by the entrance, holding everyone back. But Zaheer didn't stop walking. The former prisoners moved out of his way as he strode forward. I trailed behind him. Shahzad looked at me expectantly as I drew level with her. I didn't have an easy answer to give her. I didn't know what Zaheer was up to. He moved past her, out into the open, and I followed. Ashra's wall stood 100 feet or so from the mouth of the tunnel, and just beyond that, Through the shifting light of the wall, I could see the soldiers. There were lines of military tents along the slope of the mountain, supplies stacked between them, and soldiers milling around.
But more importantly, I saw the glint of sunlight against metal heads.
Abdals. They had more of them outside the wall. Soldiers we could fool. Hell, our numbers were good enough that we might even be able to take them in a fight. But not Abdals. Zaheer, wait! I could feel my breathing coming ragged now. He came to a stop, right by Ashra's wall.
Freedom for freedom, daughter of Bahadur. You made a promise.
And then his arm lashed out violently toward Ashra's wall. But when his hand met it, he didn't burn. Instead, the barrier of light shattered. It reminded me of the glass dome over the Sultan's chambers, breaking apart into stars. Except these didn't fall to the ground. Again, Zaheer seemed to draw the light into himself, like a hungry fire swallowing kindling. It was like watching what he had done with the Abdals, only 1,000 times greater. And then, just like that, Ashra's wall was gone. No, more than gone. Ashra was dead. That was what he had done. That was how he had granted us our freedom from Aramat. He destroyed the soul that had been protecting the entire world from what was inside that mountain. And now we were left exposed, as from the other side of where the wall had been, 12 startled soldiers' faces turned in our direction, and 12 more blank Abdal faces stared at us. And then they raised their hands. Chapter 26. I dove back toward the shelter of the tunnel, even as a wave of heat and fire poured out of the Abdals, flooding in behind me, as people screamed and retreated back into the mountain. Shahzad grabbed me, yanking me in as I searched for my Demji power, dragging on any dust I could find, trying to shore up the mouth of the tunnel. But whatever strength I'd had, I'd used saving Shahzad. And my power seemed to slip away, tumbling useless out of my grasp, abandoning me. Out of the corner of my eye, I saw one person burn, turning to dust before the fire abated, as quickly as it had come, leaving my skin feeling raw from the heat and my lungs scorched.
"We should retreat," Shahzad said, breathless.
Behind us, Rahim and Ahmed were trying to return some order to the panicking people in the tunnel. The rebels who had seen Abdals before were more level-headed, but the other newly freed prisoners had never faced anything like this. They were running for anywhere that might be shelter, back into Aramat. My mind tripped over itself looking for a way through this. We had a few 100 recently freed prisoners in no shape for fighting, a genie who had turned our little game on its head, and 2 worn-out Demji. Outside, I could hear the metallic steps of the Abdals moving toward the mouth of the tunnel. Coming to finish us off, forcing us back into the dark of Aramat, where they could pick us off easily. I traded a look with Shahzad, and saw the same naked fear on her face. That was when I knew we were in trouble. I'd never seen Shahzad run out of ideas before. We were done for. I had gotten everyone this far, only to lose them on the edge of freedom. And then the metallic footsteps stopped. I stilled, feeling my heart's panicked timpani in my chest. I could almost hear it now in the sudden silence. And then a voice from outside, too distant to make out any words. A voice I knew, though it took me a second to place it. Noorsham. I was moving before Shahzad could stop me, rushing back toward the mouth of the tunnel. I burst out into the open air. Zaheer was nowhere to be seen, but there, standing behind the Abdals and the Sultan's soldiers, was Noorsham. Farther behind him, I could make out Jin, Sam, Tamid, and the twins. How the hell had they found me? Ahmed's compass. My hand drifted to my side, feeling the weight still there. I'd forgotten. It was still in my pocket. I should have known better than to think Jin would just wait patiently for me to return. He tracked me down once from Sazi a long time ago, and now he'd done it again. Relief and fear warred inside me. Even if this was the end, at least we were back together. Either we all survived or we all died here. Norsham looked terribly vulnerable next to the army of Abdals. He wasn't clad in bronze armor like they were. He was wearing nothing but simple desert clothes, standing with his hands extended, as he had yesterday over the people of Sazi. And he wasn't wearing the iron shackles I'd put on him either. His power was running free. I understood what he was about to do a second before the Abdals turned to face him, summoning their own fire against his. No! The scream tore out of my throat, but I was too late. Norsham's power swelled to meet that of the Abdals, even as they flooded the mountain. Man-made, stolen genie fire, rushing to meet Norsham's Demji-given gift of destruction. I ran toward him, knowing there was nothing I could do. No way to stop what was going to happen. It was as if a new sun were being born. The explosion bloomed bright and violent, invading everything, even the air around it. It slammed into me like a javelin of heat and light, knocking me down, blinding me. But I could still smell the burning. I could taste blood. Then I tasted ash. I woke violently out of unconsciousness. I couldn't have been out long. My ears were still ringing with the aftershock of the explosion, my lungs burning. I pushed myself up agonizingly. The pain was nothing, though, compared to the heat still rising from my skin. Even my Demji side was struggling to fight off this heat, but I found my way to my feet all the same. The battlefield of fire had turned dark and cold. The soldiers, who had been flesh and blood, were nothing but dust now. There was no sign of their tents or any of the camp they had built here. All of it had been razed. But there were pieces of Abdals left in the wreckage. The bronze had fused to the stones, like shiny scars on the mountain. I saw a bronze face, some of its features still intact, its nose protruding away from the stone, its mouth twisted by the heat into some grotesque scream. I half staggered, half ran across the remnants of the brief and bloodless fight to the one body that was not metal or ash, where Norsham was sprawled amid the destruction he had made. I dropped to my knees next to him. His chest was rising and falling with shallow breathing. He was badly burned, half his face blackened and unrecognizable. We were Demji. We weren't supposed to burn so easily. But this was genie fire, and we were only half gene. Our other halves were terribly mortal. He didn't look anything like the weapon I'd first come face to face with on that train, or like the man leading all the people in his cult toward righteousness. He just looked like a desert boy, young and helpless and dying. Eyes like the sky stared up at me, wide and scared, like he couldn't understand what was happening. Like he wanted me to explain, to comfort him. Like he needed a sister. What are you doing here? My lips were blistered, and my fingertips burned against the heat of his skin as I cradled him. I ought to be screaming. I remembered after Emin had died, Hala's grief had all come out in one strangled cry that filled the hidden house. That had been the last noise she'd made before she hadn't spoken for days.
We came to save you.
His voice rasped out, his one good eye struggling to find me. Even after I had betrayed him, after we had chained him up, after Jin had undoubtedly dragged him up this mountain as a prisoner. After all that, still Norsham had chosen to save us. Well, that was stupid. I wanted to put my hand against his heart to make it keep beating by sheer will alone, but it was pumping too slow already. I couldn't take this. Not another Demji burning out so young, like Hala and Emin and Hawa and Ashra. Not my brother falling now in a fight that wasn't his when he had survived so much. A shadow fell across his face. I looked up, expecting to find Jin or Shahzad or someone who could help me. Instead, Zaheer stood over me, watching me with cruel impassiveness. I wanted to scream at him that this was not fair. But Jean didn't deal in fair. They dealt in trades and wants and desires, and the Sinmaker wanted one thing. "Save him," I said. "You made a promise to me to do what I want, and I want to save him. Do that, and we'll end this. I'll set you free. Please." Zaheer watched Norsham struggle for a moment longer, his breathing coming out ragged from his scorched lungs, each breath counting down to his last.
"His body is too broken," he said. "I cannot repair this."
"I don't care!" The sob that tore out of me came from the oldest part of me, the part of my soul that was immortal, that used not to know death. The part that understood what the first beings had felt when they watched the first of their number die and become stars and meet their own end, when grief and despair and rage and hopelessness were all born in a single moment. "I want to save him. Save him and I'll free you. Save him and we'll end this here. Please, I'm begging you. Save him and I'll release you." Finally, Zaheer inclined his head ever so slightly. He didn't look as pitiless as he had a moment ago. He knew what it was like to lose someone when you weren't ready to.
"We have a deal, daughter of Bahadur."
The sun glared down on us from high above. Zaheer pushed me back from my brother without touching me. It was as if the air clasped me gently by the shoulders, drawing me away, like a kindly relative pulling me from a sickbed so a holy man could work, so I didn't have to see the worst of it. He lifted Norsham the same way without touching him. I stuffed the protest down my throat that he was hurting him, that he was too weak to survive being moved. And then it was as if his body simply fell away, disappearing into the air like sand scattering on the wind, leaving Norsham there, but instead of flesh and blood and bone, he was made of light, like Ashra's wall. The rabble of prisoners parted as Zaheer moved forward, Norsham's body floating ahead of him. I wanted to save him. I wanted him to live. I had asked Zaheer for it, but he hadn't promised me what kind of life Norsham would have. And there was another power at work here. Norsham's mother had wished that her Demji son would do something great. Our father had granted it, and Norsham believed he would, in the name of God. I didn't know if there was a God, but I knew that there were monsters, and he could protect us from those. All eyes turned as Norsham's glowing form reached the same place where Ashra's soul had stood as a wall for thousands of years, his body shifting, seeming to grow. As I watched, Norsham seemed to turn toward the mountain and wrap his arms around it before all sense of his body disappeared, transforming into a burning wall of light instead. He stood where Ashra had, relieving her watch finally after thousands of years, shielding us from the evil that lived inside. Here he would get what he had wanted. He would save far more people than he had ever killed. And his mother would get what she had wished for. Greatness. Chapter 27. I woke to a setting sun and the feeling of movement below me. I blinked blearily, feeling like I was coming back to life.
She lives,
a familiar, rueful voice said quietly in my ear. I tilted my head back. Jin was behind me. I was settled against his chest, his arms around my middle, steadying me. We were on a horse, I realized. A blue one. Is. And around us, walking at a slow but steady pace, were our people. We were making our way down the mountain by the look of things.
You passed out,
Jin said from behind me. I felt his hands slip away from me momentarily, and then he was pressing a flask of water into my hands. I gulped from it gratefully. Everything was a blur after I released Zaheer. In the stories, Jean appeared and vanished in great claps of thunder and smoke. But the truth was, when I released Zaheer, he was just there one moment and gone the next. It was like waking up from a dream. And all that was left was destruction. The last thing I remembered was Jin finding me, sitting among the ashes and gathering me to him. And then nothing.
Tamid says you must have hit your head when you got knocked down,
Jin was saying. When he spoke, I could feel the vibrations through his chest and into my spine.
Hence, you passed out. But we had to keep moving, so we moved you.
We, he said, as if it was the most casual thing in the world. But it wasn't. We meant all of us now, because we'd done it. We'd gotten everyone out. The realization settled over me as I looked around, seeing faces in the light of day. Shahzad was walking a few paces ahead, Sam next to her, talking at the rattling speed of a runaway train. I couldn't hear what he was saying, but every once in a while a small smile danced over her face. To one side of us, Tamid was limping painstakingly down the mountain, eyes on the path to keep from tripping, sometimes leaning on Delilah for help. Or maybe she was leaning on him. It was hard to tell. Ahmed led the way up ahead, Rahim next to him, the rabble of former prisoners dragging themselves to safety in his wake. We were a sorry collection. Wounded, burned, half-starved, bedraggled, exhausted. But free. We had done it. The impossible. We'd left Aramot alive. Where are we? I asked. My voice came out raspy.
Nearly at Sazi,
Jin said. He nodded upward, and I noticed a small bird swooping in circles over our heads. Maz, I realized. Our scout. A sudden panic gripped my chest. We needed to slow down. We needed to be careful. I can walk, I said hastily. Iz, stop! Our blue Demji did as I said, and I swung one leg over him, sliding off his back. Jin followed close behind, steadying me as I hit the ground, head swimming. I pushed through the tired mass of rebels and released prisoners. I needed to talk to Ahmed. We couldn't just barge into Sazi like this. But it was too late. As I broke through to the front of the pack, I saw the outskirts of Sazi. People were already gathering at the bottom of the slope, staring up at us expectantly. But I knew they weren't waiting for us. They were waiting for Noorsham.
Where is he?
Someone called out from the assembled crowd as we got closer.
What have you done with him?
Ahmed's brow furrowed as he turned to me.
What are they talking about?
But I didn't answer Ahmed. I called out to the crowd instead. He's... dead, stuck on my tongue. as we drew to a stop a few paces away. That wasn't true. He wasn't dead. He wasn't alive either. Norsham is not coming back. A rustle went through the crowd around us as this news settled. I shifted nervously. It wouldn't take long for it to turn to anger. You killed him! An accusation came from a skinny woman at the front of the crowd. No! I protested, shaking my head, scrambling for the right words. Shahzad pressed through to the front now to stand beside me. I could feel the tension building in her like it did before a fight.
Liar!
Another cry came up angrily from the back. The rest of the crowd was shifting uncertainly, but I didn't think it would be long before they turned against us.
She's not lying,
Tamid said, but his voice was drowned out by the shouting.
Well,
Sam came up behind me.
This doesn't look good.
Emboldened by the mob forming at his back, a man stepped toward me. Shahzad might be weak, but she still moved faster than most, and she was between us in a second.
Try it,
she challenged. The man took another step, seeming like he did indeed fully intend to try to take us on. I felt drained, too drained to fight. But we didn't have a choice. Ahmed had led us back here when we should have steered clear. And now we had a mob facing us. I had seen what they were capable of when they had forced us to confront the Eye. We might match them in numbers, but we were a sorry collection of bedraggled prisoners, and they were an angry mass of devotees. Behind the belligerent man, a woman picked up a stone from the ground, preparing to throw it. Then, just as the last of the sunlight started to fade, a light bloomed from the mountain face. Right between Shahzad and the first man who had challenged us, the air turned itself inside out, changing the darkness into dozens of colors. And then it spread, in the open space between the belligerent inhabitants of Sazi and our people, forming into a collection of bronze soldiers facing a fiery wall. An illusion in miniature of what had awaited us outside Aramot. The woman staggered back, dropping the stone from her hand as tiny Abdals blossomed around her feet like flowers. And Delilah stepped forward out of the crowd. She's not lying. Delilah spoke softly, but that didn't keep her from being heard. Not when she was conjuring images from thin air. He wasn't killed. He walked into the arms of death like a hero. Even as she spoke, a small figure of Norsham materialized out of thin air and started to advance. Delilah's voice was gentle and melodic. It always had been. It was what made everyone think she was so fragile that she needed to be protected. But it was a good voice for stories, too. She held the attention of the crowd easily as her words and her illusions worked together to tell the tale. She chose her words carefully, stopping and pausing at the right moments. Delilah, who had been the subject of so many stories about the Sultan's unfaithful wife and the rebel prince's return, now telling one for herself. Her voice cracked as it got to the end, as Norsham's soul evanesced from his body, taking the place of Ashra's wall. So you see, Delilah's illusions melted away as she finished. He can't come back. Darkness and silence followed those words for a long moment, as the spell of her words slowly began to drop away. Then a man fell to his knees. Another one dropped down behind him, and then another and another, until in the space of a few moments every single one of Norsham's people was kneeling before Delilah. She had done it. Delilah had saved us, and she'd done it without a single weapon. I'd forgotten how powerful a story could be. Suddenly, from the middle of the crowd, a boy stood back up abruptly. I knew him, I realized. He was from Dust Walk. His name was Samir, and he was a year or so younger than I was. My hand strayed for a gun that wasn't there, but he made no move to fight.
Are you really the Rebel Prince?
He asked. All eyes turned to Ahmed.
I am. I could fight for you,
the boy declared loudly.
Against the Sultan. He killed our leader. He drove us from our homes.
A murmur of assent went through the crowd.
I would fight for you. I would fight for you, too.
Another man stood up, this one older, more hardened.
If our leader was willing to die for you, so am I.
So would I. It was a girl who stood up now, sweeping short dark hair behind her ears, speaking a little more quietly than the men. And so would I. I knew that voice. It was Olia, my cousin, who was nearest to me in age, now that Shira was gone. If there was ever someone I didn't think cared about a damn thing enough to fight for it, it was her. But then Hala had been that way, too. So had I once. I noticed Olia's mother, my uncle's second wife, grab for her arm as if to pull her back. But Olia jerked her arm out of her mother's reach, standing tall as others rose around her, declaring their allegiance. Delilah had done a whole lot more than save us. She had rallied for us. All eyes were on Ahmed when I noticed Shahzad moving slowly away from the front of the group, melting away from all this. Sam saw her too. He gave me a raised brow as we caught each other's eye. I shook my head quickly. Stay, that gesture told him, as I slipped away behind her. For once, he did as he was told. Shahzad! I didn't call out to her until we were out of earshot of the others. Ahead of me on the slope of the mountain, Shahzad started, almost losing her footing. I'd never encountered anything quick enough or quiet enough to startle her. Sorry, she said when she realized it was me. I had to go. I couldn't breathe. She dropped down to sit on the slope of the mountain. I needed to... She trailed off, not sure what she needed. I wasn't either. Do you want me to go? I hovered uncertainly. No, she said. I don't want to be. She cut herself off, laughing ruefully. I wasn't afraid of the dark when I was young. We're still young, I said, dropping down next to her. She'd been alone in the dark for 3 days. That'd be enough to make a lot of people worse than afraid. So are they, she said. Her face shifted in and out of the gloom of early night, like she was slipping away, and I was struggling to hold on to her here and now. We're going to get some of them killed, you know. I did know, but saying it out loud would make it true, and I didn't want that. I sent Emin to die, she said, after a long moment of silence. I stayed quiet, though I'd figured it had been Shahzad who had come up with the plan to send Emin to die in Ahmed's place. She was the strategist. She was the one who made the hardest choices for us. Which means I killed Navid, too. That one caught me off guard. I suddenly realized that I hadn't seen Navid as we fled Aramot. But there were plenty I hadn't seen. He dropped dead in the prison below the palace. Just stopped breathing. As the sun set, When Emin's head was taken off, I realized. They'd made a vow when they'd married. My life is yours to share until the day we die. An oath made by a Demji was a dangerous thing. Lord Bilal had counted on it to save his life, but it had robbed Navid of his. I thought I was going to die down there, and I saw them both, over and over again, waiting for me. I didn't think Shahzad had been alone in the dark. I didn't think those images were just guilt. But just now, I didn't think telling her that would help. I killed Hala, I offered instead, my voice cracking. Shahzad's head darted up as she took in my words. Not that I had let Hala die or sent her to her death. I had taken her life. How did it happen? She asked after a moment. She sounded more measured, more like herself, like a general absorbing every detail of this latest casualty. The Sultan. I had to either kill her or let him have her. I trailed off. I did what I had to do, because it was what you would have done. We fell silent, sitting side by side on the mountain, the rustle of the camp far below drifting up to us on the air, mourning those we had lost. Hala, Navid, Emin, Shira, Bahi, and more I couldn't count. Mourning that not everyone down below with us in Sazi tonight would live to see Ahmed sit on the throne, if he ever did. Me among them. Tamid said, I started, then hesitated. I had to tell someone. Nobody knew about what Tamid had told me back in the hidden house. It hadn't mattered until today. Until Tamid had read the words painted above the doorway that led to Zaheer. The same words he had been searching for high and low, the ones that could release what was left of Farishte into death from the confines of the machine and give us a fighting chance against the Sultan. Tamid reckons there's a good chance that I'll die if I release Farishte. Shahzad's head snapped up. But if someone doesn't deactivate the machine, then we have to face the Abdals. And no matter how many people stand up to fight with us, I don't think we stand much of a fighting chance against them. Shahzad pressed her hand against her mouth as she considered this.
Have you told him yet?
She meant Jin, not Ahmed. We both knew without saying it that I couldn't tell Ahmed. He would try to find a way out of this for me. But I wasn't sure I had it in me to tell Jin either. I was telling Shahzad because I knew she understood. She would fight for me as long as she could, and she would mourn me if she could not win. But she wouldn't try to stop me, because she would do the same. I remembered, way back at the beginning on a runaway train, holding her hand, keeping her from slipping onto the tracks and dying. Her telling me to let her go, just like Hala had in the Sultan's grip. For the greater good. She'd never been afraid. I thought of what Sam had said back at the Whitefish. That anyone who wasn't frightened of dying was stupid or lying. I knew I couldn't be the second. I didn't like to think I was the first. But what would I be if I asked others to die for this cause, but wasn't willing to give myself up to it? But I'll tell you what, I said. If I die, we sure as hell better win this war. Shahzad let out a short, honest laugh as she pushed herself to her feet.
Well then, I guess we'd better do something about our new recruits, she said, offering a hand down for me.
I clasped it. As she pulled me to my feet, I felt something knocking against my hip. When I glanced down, I knew what it was, even in the barest flash of moonlight on metal. It was the knife Zaheer had given me. Somehow, it had made it out of Aramot, tucked into my belt. And I realized, with a sinking sense of dread, that I had a way to win this war hanging at my hip. One simple way to make sure that my death was worthwhile. All I had to do was kill a prince. Chapter 28. The next day was a new dawn. We didn't talk about the things that had been said in the dark the night before. We had a war to win now. Shahzad and Rahim took stock of the weapons surrendered on entry to the camp. There were enough to arm everyone if we stretched things. Jin and Sam and I reclaimed our own guns. Nobody seemed to notice that I had a knife at my side that hadn't come from the stash of weapons.
"Who already knows how to shoot?"
Shahzad asked the new recruits, lined up haphazardly in front of her. Most hands went up. That wasn't surprising. This was the last county. When you made guns, you tended to know how to use them.
"What about hand-to-hand?"
Hands dropped, and I saw Samir lean in toward his neighbor, saying something under his breath, a smirk on his face.
"Something to say?" Shahzad asked, never missing a thing. I had a feeling he was wondering why he was listening to a woman when he'd pledged his allegiance to a prince.
I could see that question on a few faces around us. Samir spoke up.
"I was saying that it's not much good having a knife when you've got a gun pointed at you."
"Have you ever seen the streets of Isman?"
Shahzad didn't wait for an answer.
"They're narrow enough that half the time you can't walk two abreast, let alone turn around quickly enough to get a shot off before your opponent is on top of you. That is when you need to be able to fight man to man."
"So, how does a woman know how to fight man to man?"
Another boy sniggered, loud enough so that he was heard. Shahzad's eyebrows went up. I stepped back.
"I'll tell you what."
Shahzad turned toward him.
"Why don't you come and face me? Anyone who can land a blow can take over this training."
A small audience was gathering by now. Everyone who'd ever seen Shahzad fight knew exactly where this was going. The rebels were elbowing one another slyly as the boy stepped forward, looking all too confident.
"Doesn't seem like a fair fight to me,"
the boy said too lightly. The boy was at least twice Shahzad's weight, broad where she was slim. Slimmer still after her time in Aramot.
"It's not even close to a fair fight,"
Jin commented from the sidelines. We'd all formed a circle now, watching.
"Oh, my friend."
Sam clapped the boy on his back.
"I'm so sorry for your loss."
"My loss?"
the young idiot said.
"Of your dignity."
He gave him a rueful smile before stepping back to stand next to me. The challenger lunged at our general, all ungainly fists and brute force. Shahzad moved like a blade through water, going for his clumsy legs. She danced under his fists easily, her foot catching him in the ankle. And just like that, he was on the ground, and she was on top of him with a knife at his throat. The fight had lasted less than 3 seconds.
"And now you're dead," Shahzad said.
"That's not fair,"
he wheezed, fighting for breath against the knee pressed into his chest. I got the feeling she was pressing a little harder than she strictly needed to, pressing a point home.
"You're the one who said it wouldn't be a fair fight."
Shahzad got to her feet, sheathing the knife. The boy stumbled to his feet as well. I realized he was going to lunge for her again, a second too late to shout a warning. But Shahzad didn't need one. She grabbed his hand as it closed on her shoulder.